Hello, humans, and welcome to Audio Face, an irreverent podcast about the music news and music culture that mostly matters. I'm Dan.
I am Sean.
On episode 201, we had to shake up a little bit of everything, actually, because as was sort of predicted, Kanye West decided to drop his album on a Sunday. So here we are reviewing it. We didn't get to review it as thoroughly as, you know, like many of the other albums that we review often on Audio Face, and also the other ones that came out on Friday, like normal albums do, such as Screen Violence by Churches and How Long Do You Think It's Gonna Last by Big Red Machine, which we'll also be reviewing later in the program, along with a jam-packed new singles. I forgot how jam-packed we made new singles, but works out. It's some really good singles this week, and really heading into a lot of really good music coming up very soon. So let's get into that on this podcast. Let's start with Family Ties by Baby Keem featuring Kendrick Lamar. How could you ask? Like, I don't be riding my raps. The critics got everyone tapped. You gotta relax. The city where nobody sleeps. Just tap in and ask where I'm at. Ho!
Smoking on your top five tonight. I'm smoking on your what's the name tonight. Smoking on your show's name tonight.
I am the Omega. PG Lane, Rolly Gang, SIE. Don't you address me unless it's with four letters.
And, I thought you know. Yeah, what do you think about that?
It's damn good. Really like it. I really like it. It's a cool track because it's nearly like three tracks made into one. So it like starts off as like a typical trap, almost like a typical trap song. Then it morphs into this really just banging traps on the middle, and then Kendrick's part towards the last like minute and a half, he's just throwing on just crazy lyrics, and I love it.
Yeah, so
great to hear him back too. And Baby Keem's part's really good, his alleged cousin or something like that. So
yeah, posting the alleged family photo for the basically
with the CIA eye tags on
black
them.
Bars, yeah, but protect the innocents, right? But it's really. It's been kind of a trend in trap songs, do like the double song kind of thing in the middle of it, which I've actually found like to be not that bad. You kind of change up the beat a little bit. Sometimes it can be interesting. Not always, but often it's really good. But no, we're hitting you with the three beat here, the three beat switch. And yeah, the second one, Baby Keem goes into like this, like harder lines, and you know, braggadocios, nothing new to rap music under the sun. Baby Keem's really at it. And then Kendrick Lamar with his, returning lyrics, if you will, as he's going to his, like, latest album release cycle. Really just coming at all the haters. I think Kanye's name dropped. He's just talking a lot about his kind of spot at the top, being king, number one, like, best in the game kind of deal. And he's one of the rare artists where when he says that kind of thing, when he raps that kind of thing, there actually sort of feels that sort of weight to that, at least right now, because he is kind of on top of the game right now, unlike a lot of artists who sort of act like that. But in reality, as we'll get to later, the albums don't really hold all that much muster.
The best music. You are not the best music.
Right. All you do is get hype and attention and use that to sell albums. But that's not necessarily good music.
Yes.
Moving on, we have Peer Pressure by Rayvon. Now, Rayvon is an absolute newcomer from Long Beach, a new signee to Top Dog Entertainment, relevant because of talked about Kendrick Lamar with the previous single, but also because with Kendrick Lamar announcing that we talked about, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago, that his last album, he's going to be releasing his final album with Top Dog Entertainment this year. It is it's going to be very interesting to see. Yeah, we were just talking about that conversation about what is the roster going to look like for Top Dog. Like, will they be able to stay as a label as relevant, as punchy, as like a place where, you know, they have like a good few really heavy hitters. And if it's going to happen, you're going to get maybe 25-year-old Rayvon kind of starting that trend a little bit. These first three tracks, they're pretty good. They're well produced, like Timberlake. Ain't got time to FIFA, ain't got a condom either. Hey, you with that jazz girl, you Condoleezza. You couldn't get a slice of pizza. No, I do not have time to go conversate. Unless you gon' jack me like Monterey. I'ma keep it G-real with you, cause I got time today. I know you too had to concentrate. Get hit in your head, that's when they take your mind away. God give you wings and you fly away. If we see your eye, make the doctors come operate. Cops come, then we don't cooperate. Hey, top shotter. Yeah, his flow is like perfectly fine. There's definitely like room to grow there, but it's not
they're nice and short
like
too.
Yeah.
It's a good palette tester for him.
Yeah, a couple different flows, a couple different beats. Yeah, just kind of get your sense of what he's kind of doing and what he's kind of going on with. I'll be interested to see like a longer project, maybe not necessarily an album yet, but you know, a drop kind of deal, to see like more of what he's got and just to kind of expand that range a little bit. But so far, not too bad. And then moving on, we have the Indulgence Corner. It is the Meanwhile EP by Gorillaz. And so we have to be.
Damon does not listen to Audioface, confirmed.
Yeah, Damon
is like, fuck you, Dan. I'm gonna do what I want.
I'm going to continue making music till the bodies are cold. And still after that, I'm going to have the opposite of Anderson .Paak's tattoo. Use my like final moments on the heart machine to turn that into a beat somehow. Put like six artists on it. But yeah, the Meanwhile EP, it's meant to be kind of like inspired by both West London and Carnival in general. So it sort of has in some ways a dub kind of thing, in some ways kind of like an urban gritty kind of deal. I like how the cover from the Meanwhile EP is actually like it's an homage to a really early Gorillaz promotional image back in the like 2000s. And so, you know, in the sense that Gorillaz are an art project and a music project, they're able to do like a recreation of the band, you know, like redrawn, aged 20 years plus or so, in that same location essentially to do that for the EP. So that was kind of cool. The songs themselves, pretty good. They're like, you know, when I was in Carnival, I followed your it's typical Gorillaz side project kind of thing. Like, they're nice little beats. I particularly liked Jimmy. I think it kind of had a cool thing. But Meanwhile, like the title track also kind of leads, I think, is the stronger song of all three of them. But it's definitely doesn't feel like a directional sort of thing where I can figure out, okay, Gorillaz are going in X, Y, or Z direction. No, these are just some songs that they made in the middle kind of break, because Damon kind of jumped the gun saying, oh yeah, Song Machine 2 next year. Absolutely. We'll definitely get to do that. And Jamie's like, please stop. So I don't think we'll be getting, you'll definitely probably not getting Song Machine season 2 this year. If anything, maybe a single, just the way Damon works. But also, Damon Albarn's going to be releasing his own single work his own solo work this year. It'll be coming out in a couple months. So I tend to believe he'll be preoccupied with that a little bit. But this is perfectly fine to hold us off. Even though Damon makes a lot of music, what'd you think about these quality-wise?
Oh, they're okay. Definitely like a side project sound and whatnot. And kind of keeping up with the sound that he likes to make with a lot of side projects. He tends to like to do, or at least I've noticed, he likes to do a lot of Afrobeats, a lot of different influence stuff when he does side project things or little one-offs. I've noticed that a lot the past couple of years. So he's keeping a trend with that. And yeah, it's not bad. I didn't mind it.
Yeah, I heard an interesting interview with Damon that was like, he approaches new albums in a way where like he wants to immerse himself in some musical subculture that he doesn't understand and then try to bring his own spin with what he's learning kind of like on the fly to albums and projects. So you get that in like Monkey Journey to the West. You get that in The Good, the Bad, the Queen. You get that in Rocket Juice in the Moon. All the other different like random projects that have like influences outside of English Britpop or alternative rock kind of deal. So very good. Done fanning over Damon Albarn. Finally, last single we have, You Can Do It by Caribou.
I love this track so much.
Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it.
It's pretty good. It's one of those Caribou take a vocal part and kind of like loop it throughout the song deals.
It's the best part is it's a in the Spotify, like the little video thing, it's a dog jumping up on a loop getting a frisbee, and I feel like him saying you can do it on repeat is a dog just like chasing its tail over and over and over and over again while in a rave, and that's what the track is.
It's definitely a really fun track. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like the words can be over done a little bit. Like one of my favorite songs. Yeah, like one of my favorite songs in Suddenly, Caribou's last proper project that we reviewed and really loved in 2020. I want to say it's Nuke Jade. But yeah, it does this like the dollar day in the past, got the dollar day in the past kind of
deal
over and over again. I really do love that song, but that effect can also be kind of overwhelming for people. So
yeah, it can morph the words into trick your brain into making it sound like something that it isn't.
Yeah, I'm not even sure the lyrics are
the old Punch Mexican Monkey.
Yeah, I'm not even sure. I'm not even sure like dollar day in the past is whatever I just said is like the lyric, but it just sounds like that over and over again.
Exactly.
Anyways, those were our jam-packed singles and EPs that we did. Thank you very much for going through that. Before we go to the rest of the podcast with Kanye West things, all those other wonderful things, you had a really interesting news week as well. Some really substantive, juicy stories that I can't wait to get into. Just make sure you're checking out our 2021 AF playlist where we are adding new songs pretty much every week where, great songs from the year 2021. You want to know what's there? Just check that out. It's in the podcast description. It's in the YouTube video description. So make sure you check that out. We have bonus episodes that we have done, will continue to do. We've done them on Radiohead, Caro Bonito, Daft Punk, State of Music 2021, MF Doom, etc. You've heard about them, so check them out wherever you get podcasts and like the previous episodes. Just look back in the previous episode history, or they're available on YouTube as well. You can just search Audio Face and those artists. You can help grow Audio Face really easy for free by following Audio Face Pod on Twitter and Instagram. That's at Audio Face Pod on Twitter and Instagram, or go to youtube.com/Audio Face Pod on YouTube, of course, and subscribe to us there. Really helps grow the show, and we really appreciate it. Follow on Spotify if you're listening on Spotify. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening to podcasts. Whatever's the thing that makes sure you get new episodes every week, do that. Power Report, it's a break week, but last week we did an episode, really comprehensive episode as they all are, on Afghanistan. Talked to Arash Azizadeh, an Afghan activist, on the situation going on there, and then we split up the episode and then had Bam on to talk about how the media in America did a really poor job of explaining the whole Afghanistan situation to the American public, brutally misinforming them just as they had for the past 20 years. So definitely check that out. And then lastly, thank you, Peter, for editing and mixing and mastering these episodes. They sound as nice as possible. Peter's at Dead Music Productions. You can find him at deadmusic666 on Insta. With that, we go into the news. And
jumps in it.
I've got a lot of people asking me about this story, so this is a really interesting one. So Spencer Eldon, who is most famously known as the naked baby on the Nirvana Nevermind cover, trying to get the dollar bill that's on the fish hook or whatever, and he is currently choosing to sue the estate and the surviving members of Nirvana, the Kurt Cobain estate and the surviving members of Nirvana, over saying that the image that was used on the cover is child pornography, and that his parents didn't give like proper like notice or whatever for the image. This is of course interesting. A lot of people were surprised by this lawsuit, not necessarily because, like, you know, it's very, very long past the fact. That's not a thing to say. Like, you can have complicated emotions about these things that happen to you as a kid when you're not really able to make a sort of like choice about it. It's your parents like getting involved in that to some extent. But yeah, the way that it's just a stark contrast, the way that Eldon has sort of been acting about the Nevermind thing, because he's sort of taken it on as a personality. I mean, like, to be the naked baby on this really iconic album cover, it's actually a really cool thing. And I mean, like, you can see it as a really cool thing. Obviously, I'm not telling him to like process being in that position, but like, it was something that, I mean, he has like a Nevermind tattoo on his body, on his chest, right? So like, to a certain extent,
and he recreated the photo of I think 5 years ago or something like that too.
Yeah, he's done a lot of press talking about it, and, you know, talking about the weird feelings and how it's like adapted over time of how he felt about it. But it's sort of a jump now all of a sudden for him to say that, you know, like to put these sort of accusations forward, right?
Yeah, exactly. Just super out of the blue that he did all of that stuff, has a tattoo of it on his body, and then recreated the photo a few years ago, and now wants to press a lawsuit on it. It's just super random and out of the blue. So yeah, and I think a lot of people are bringing up that point too.
Yeah, it's at some points, it's getting into it where, like, in the past, Eldon complained that maybe like there's like a lack of communication between the Nirvana band members and him later on in life that maybe he wanted, which, I mean, he's not entitled to that, but like maybe that would be fine. Either way, it still sort of seems like I'm not sure what the logic is for this necessarily, but it's just such a contrast to what has been said mm-hmm. in the past and how he's been treating this exactly. in the past, that this is why everyone's sort of like shocked by it and not yeah, shocked, and sort of like people rolling their eyes even.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what I've getting a lot of, and that's kind of my sentiment as well.
Yeah. And I think that's pretty much the open and shut of that story. But we'll see how it develops.
Yeah.
And now I love this. I love this. Donda by Kanye West. It's
27 songs, an hour and 48 minutes long.
Yes, it is. Oh my god. It dropped on Sunday, August 29th, around the time we record. It's a 2-hour long thing. We got to listen to it. I also have some thoughts from our resident Kanye aficionado, Annie, who listened to the album as well this morning and gave me quite comprehensive thoughts that I'll get to very later on in the episode segment, etc. Because we've done previous things on Kanye West and all the album rollouts. We've taken the stance of not paying attention to the press exercise of Kanye West and just focusing on the music. And so later on in the podcast and in a separate clip, we'll get into some of the press craziness around this past week with Donda, because there's some relevant things there. But we have an album to review. We have a long album to review. But like, it's not an album. It's barely a collection of songs. It's, again, like to borrow a little bit from what Annie's saying, it's just like SoundCloud fodder, essentially. It's just like bad ditto copies of SoundCloud music.
It's just really random. It's we have a metric ton of features on the album. Just so many people that are on it. It's not very cohesive on that. You have like the first track is the Donda chant, where it's Selena Johnson just saying Donda over and over again, which I kind of wanted to be the arbitrary scale, but I think that would break our brains. So
I'm gonna give this 22 Dondas.
I'm gonna give this 85 Dondas. Exactly. I just started the album with that, and I just literally facepalmed of like, okay, I guess this is how it's going to start. This is how it's going
to
be.
I will also say, like, not to cut you off, but there are a lot of like repeat features. So like the Sunday Service Choir is there a lot. You have Vori, who's been popping up a lot like in mm-hmm. rap music just as like a vocalist, so like good for that. You get kind of a return of the throne with Jail.
Mm-hmm. The first part.
And then you have Jail Part 2 with DaBaby, Francis and the Lights, and Marilyn Manson. More on that later. But you have a metric mess of features. But as you were saying.
Yeah, it's not cohesive with all the features on here. Like, there are parts of it that are decent, and there are parts of this that are just absolute awful. Like, Off the Grid, the fourth song, Playboi Carti, is atrocious.
We off the grid, this for my kid. Everything we did for the crib didn't hit. Blessing with fist this trip. Going grid, sex with G-Sticks. Lit in 76. He's grid, then we off the grid.
Yeah, look, when I was in jail, I was low-key. Shout out to supporters that wrote me. Eat food, work out, and go sleep. You know I'm praying he carrying both feet.
It's one of the worst things I've heard. You know, I already had the Playboi Carti album that we reviewed earlier this year that I thought was the worst thing. I was like, I thought it couldn't get worse. It might have got worse with Off the Grid. That track, just the first minute I was listening to it, I'm like, I can't do this. This is why. It's awful. Absolutely awful. Dude needs to stop rapping, please. Go.
Not a lot of love for Playboi Carti on this podcast, sadly. But it's like, because remember there's Pain 1993 or whatever that song was with Drake and Playboi Carti that was like award-winningly bad.
I don't want to remember that song ever again.
And so our where we kind of left Kanye West was like, it's better if he is a producer and steps back and does some production and kind of ventures off with that while letting artists kind of come on and do features and do their own thing. But the artists are very much like phoning it in. They probably barely understand what Kanye is trying to do with the song. So they're trying to rap to it to the best they can. Like Jay-Z's lyrics feel sort of like random and haphazard. But to the production aspect of things, you can tell Kanye's venturing and trying a lot of like different things there. And like he's talented as a producer. And so some of those things are like, okay, I think some of the, like you have Hurricane with Lil Baby.
I was going to say Hurricane and Lil Baby and The Weeknd. I feel like you better off trying to call. I might not get the message. She just tried to run off with my heart, but I blocked off the ends. Yeah. Oh. I think The Weeknd's part's good, Lil Baby's part is okay, but overall that's probably the best song on this album, at least from what I've listened to so far. It's kind of hard to say. Got 2 hours of Kanye on here, which is a little too much Kanye for my brain.
2 hours of hastily listened to Kanye right before the podcast, and it's not even like you can hear it in my voice. I think I just like, oh my god, this is so much. I also have to say, we're reviewing it the morning it came out. We're talking about it as it is on Spotify right now. Kanye West might delete songs and edit songs and change them. So this is the version that was released as is. But what's on the internet right now, there's no explicit lyrics, really. Everything's been just censored out, like just muted, essentially. It's a very like Kanye West's turn recently, a spiritual sounding record. Spiritual and religious in air quotes, because like again, a lot of the juxtaposition in the rap music and the subject matter of what you're having here with the religion is a weird juxtaposition to say the least. But also it's this, I'm kind of alluding to what Annie said here, and she had a long thing, but like nothing in the album really feels moralistic per se, or merely motivates one to practice good morals or anything like that. It's more of a, it's partially like a sort of a diary on Kanye West's idea of religion through the like themes of his like late mother or whatnot. But again, also it's just like kind of all over the place songs where like Kanye is just in a mode trying to prove himself after the Kim Kardashian mess up, and that's a song too. After like all of the stuff with Drake, and we're going to be talking about more of that later. Like, it just seems like Kanye's got a lot in his mind, and he's expressing that in his music, but because he has a lot in his mind, it's all a mess.
Getting back to the music of it, the track right after Hurricane, Praise God, with Baby Keem and Travis Scott. Travis Scott, is his forte is just, it's so dry. Ever since he had the album that came out in 2018, that you enjoyed a lot, and it grew on me a little while after listening to it a couple of times, but he just made that sound, and that's the only thing that he makes now.
Yeah,
it's just, that's it, and that's, you hear in that song, it's just the same thing, rinse repeat. He needs to really change up his sound in order to kind of stay relevant.
Every
other
time
than
I
the Fortnite and McDonald's shit.
Yeah every time I hear It's Lit, I die a little inside. And it's actually kind of a shame, because like Travis Scott cites, as many artists do, cites Kanye West as being one of his like major inspirations and role models. And Travis Scott like fairly successfully did a little bit of a tweak and changed the trap sound on a mainstream level. So that's like a very following Kanye footsteps kind of deal with what Kanye did with rap. But yeah, the song is just a mess. This song should have been a lot better than what it was. And that's what I can say about everything. It gets to the rest of the album, like, out of Praise God, like once you get to past Jonah, you have your cool, like, sort of like interesting, somewhat electronic beats, but just kind of get to a really lull that goes on, unfortunately, for like most of the songs till you get to at least like Keep My Spirit Alive, which at that point you're 16 songs in. A lot of these songs, this isn't like new age trap music where you got 2 minute songs. Like there's 5 minute songs here, there's 8 minute songs here. It drags on.
I know a lot of people talk about Okay with Lil Yachty and Feel Foreign, but I don't think that there's anything special about that track. At least not when I listened to it. That was okay, but I saw a lot of people like on Twitter exploding about that track for some reason. But I think it's another thing that needs to be said, is just people need to stop giving Kanye all this attention, is the thing. We have to do it because we review music and all of that, but the thing with him is he's going to keep doing all these antics and whatnot, not learn from these mistakes when people aren't going to call him out about it and just praise him as, oh my God, he's a visionary. So that I'm like, no, he's just fumbling around, trying to figure out himself. And it's nothing entirely special about it. And you saw it with this album rollout and everything. And within the music itself, it's not that great. There's a lot better things that have been coming out.
Yeah, it's not the music that Kanye is selling. It's the hype. It's
exactly.
Yeah. And so I think with that, I think it's a good time to get into what Annie, who has done on an Audio Face bonus episode with Kanye West with us, really great, has appeared on Audio Face several times, recently did the redesign for Audio Face. So all the really cool stuff and the unified thing is from her. She's a great design mind, but also she's, to preface this, like, with some of like the history, she was a Kanye fan the same way many people were Kanye fans, like from the 2000s, like from the come up era, like the beginning thing, like that entire story of rap, like it was such a thing. Graduation era, 808s and Heart, even 808s is sort of like a less well-reviewed thing, but now it's just like great in comparison to his later discography. But Beautiful, Dark, Twisted Fantasy, all those things. But yeah, Annie has a really, like, I think, balanced approach of like being a person who was into Kanye. And with that, I'll go into what she said. Now I'm reading from that. Kanye has always been an innovator for new music movements, and now with Donda, he has become the progenitor of cringe rap. The entire Donda album is cringe. There are no bangers, anthems, or groundbreaking experimental songs on this album. As a longtime Kanye fan, I used to be proud of playing Kanye songs to my friends or at a party. I wouldn't feel proud of playing anything from Donda in front of others, and I feel secondhand embarrassment that anyone will do so. Besides the cringy cognitive dissonance in the messaging, another reason why these songs are so cringe is because everything sounds like SoundCloud rap with a production budget. When Off the Grid came on, I felt disappointed. Even New Again feels like a SoundCloud rapper made an offshoot of Flashing Lights. His tank in quality, I think, is a loss for the music industry, because now all SoundCloud rappers will feel empowered to think that this is what good music sounds like. Mm-hmm. And because Kanye is doing it. Even my actual SoundCloud rapper friend texted me thinking this album is amazing and great production. LOL, there's the proof. I wouldn't even consider this album Christian rap. And again, I'm reading from Annie here. I wouldn't even consider this album Christian rap. None of these songs stir me to be a moral or better person. In fact, the fact that he invites a rapist, Marilyn Manson, and a homophobe, DaBaby, into Donda is a testament that this isn't a Christian vision. It's just the same Kanye inflammatory bullshit under the delusion of being a man of God. The soft moments also made me feel nothing, because I have no sympathy for Kanye's struggles, nor the way he fumes in them, like in Lord, I Need You. And speaking of Lord, I Need You, because that's the Kim Kardashian song. Time when silence a luxury. Cussing at your baby mama, guess is why they call it custody. God got us, baby, God got the children. The devil run the playground, but God on the building. Time and space is a luxury. But you came here to show that you still in love with me. Starting to feel like you ain't been happy for me lately, darling. Remember when you used to come around and serenade me? Oh. I suspect that Kanye was a horrible husband for Kim because of his hubris, unsurprisingly. So when he sings about his marriage struggles, I don't feel a thing, because I know he was likely the ultimate problem. And anytime he sings about his mom, I just think he solidified her legacy as his anti-hero origin story, so that he can hold a grudge on the world instead of talking about how he paid for the unneeded surgery that killed her. He wants to make it a societal issue so he can perpetuate his world against Kanye fantasy. The thing is, Kanye absolutely knows his superpower is capitalism. Any product that he slaps his name on sells. And that's why I feel embarrassment for any fan of Donda, because they feel the same rank and file. They feel like the same rank and file sheep that will love anything Kanye, the way rank and file Christians love anything Jesus, doesn't matter the quality or intention. It's gross mindlessness. I was, however, impressed with the visuals in the Donda listening event from Friday. As his career progresses, what he loses in musical quality, he's gaining in the quality of artistry in other projects. The details in his products and performance designs have gotten better since his earlier fashion drops. That's true. I think hanging out with artists like James Turrell has been good with him. I'd be okay if he stopped doing music and started doing gallery art. Overall, Donda is cringe. Kanye can try other things, but please stop making music. Kanye albums are not a thing to look forward to anymore. They're just another album in the water now. Maybe every once in a while, if he drops something good like Kids See Ghosts, that'll be a nice treat. Even when I tried to separate the art from the artist, the art ain't shit anymore. That's well said. That's like a mic drop kind of thing right there. That's why I love Annie's perspective and opinion on these things. And I definitely do have a few more things to say about the rollout, especially the Marilyn Mancy DaBaby stuff, but that'll be more in like the Kanye news segment. And we've got to rate this thing. So the arbitrary scale this week is Joe Biden falling asleep in front of world leaders, because that happened with the Israeli prime minister supposedly this week.
Sigh. He fell asleep, man.
Sigh. This album is if Joe Biden fell asleep in one of those countries in Africa where they have like a really Christian leader. Like remember one of those old stories where they have they eat the poo-poo kind of thing. Like you have those like really Christian evangelical leaders who want to just make extreme Christianity their role and thing in the country. And this would be like if Joe Biden sort of just like fell asleep entirely while like paying attention to one of their speeches, like trying to be there to build them legitimacy, and just went like, oh, listen here, Jack, I don't know what you're talking about with the corn pop and the Jesus, but all I say is Hail Easter.
You sound like a drunk Obama impression.
Yeah, when I'm Kanye'd out, it's just a vibe. What are you giving
this? This is him going up to South Korean prime minister and just falling asleep while they're trying to figure out negotiation talks between peace settlement between them and North Korea, part 8. And then it just negotiations go to hell, and then the world gets plunged into nuclear darkness. There you go.
Okay, so we now go into Westworld, and hopefully we flush down Westworld for one of the last times, at least for a few months on Audioface. But Kanye's let me start over this.
The best part is the consequence sound of him just going like this. Sounds like that's us right now, trying to just please God end this.
Yeah. I think of all the Kanye West news, the most slightly substantive and at least interesting out of all this is this sort of gadget he's releasing, or supposedly releasing. Allegedly releasing. It's called the Donda Stem Player, and it looks like this. I mean, I called it a mix between a sex toy and a brain warp. This like old game from the 2000s. This is it sort of like has like glowing lights, sort of like a maybe like a vape or something again, or a vibrator, and it you basically slide up and down, and you can change different effects and tones with the songs and the music apparently. But of course, it's worth mentioning that this was like a product demo or a tech demo. It's likely that this was like heavily edited, because it's like really futuristic looking technology. Like, I'm certain that it can be made in this decade, in this time, but I'm not certain that it works as flawlessly or as smoothly as it does in all these like release videos. And I'm even like, more certain like that the, Kanye West like is not the one who figured out.
It's like the coin credit card where it's like nothing doesn't work ever.
Yeah. There's a long history of rap artists releasing toys and video games and all these other different things that end up not working, or also just end up never being released, actually.
From the Soldier Boy system, but you know.
You got that Soldier Game 5 playing the new Spider-Man on it. No, but it's available to purchase on Kanye's website for $200, and it's starting to ship now, supposedly, after Donda's been released. So you, much like Kanye West, will be able to play with the album after it has been released, which will be a weird thing. But also in Kanye West news, since Donda did just release, he did an album like a release show similar to the ones he had done in Atlanta at the at that one like Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Arena.
Yes. But this time he brought it to Chicago, and he did a lot of interesting tricks with it. On the one hand, he built like a version of his childhood home. At least Kanye built one version of Donda's house, because there was that charity Donda's house that apparently Kanye didn't spend any money for that he was supposed to. But you had that. Kanye came out on fire, like in flames, like literally like doused himself in flames, which was a vibe. But the other interesting part was that premiering in that album, or premiering on that concert, was Jail Part 2, which features, among other people, DaBaby and Marilyn Manson. Now, for the folks keeping score at home, Marilyn Manson has been under fire this year for a number of sexual assault and like rape charges and grooming charges and a number of other like really kind of dark things. DaBaby very recently came under an extreme amount of fire for homophobic remarks, and then doubling, tripling, quadrupling down on those homophobic remarks. And then, you know, the whole like cancel culture fight started happening again. And you had a bunch of festivals who decided they didn't want to have him on their lineup for at least a little while. So Kanye West brought both of these figures on stage with him to perform a song. Like, what?
This is definitely like, this is nominated for the Hard R Award. Like this entire part of his show right there. Bringing out those two assholes and putting them on, like, just, he does it for attention, obviously. He did it for the headlines or this or that, to bring people on, for Shock and Jaw, for Two Despicable Human Beings. Why would you do that? Oh, let me see the video. Oh, maybe the song's actually good, blah blah blah. No, stop it.
Yeah, there's something to be said about the, well, we said this in our review, that Kanye is selling a hype. He's not selling like music anymore. And so with hype comes news headlines, and with news headlines, when the hype's not working, or you need to like build things around the hype, like, oh, by the way, here's the other things Kanye's doing, you also add shock and things like that. And Kanye's not unused to that. He ran for president even in this later kind of thing, in this later concert. I mean, he had a fake wedding with Kim Kardashian West, like coming out on stage and doing this like fake wedding thing together. Like, listen, you've put this woman through enough. You literally got a hologram of her dead dad and got him to speak at like her birthday. Just give this woman a break. I'm rarely like in defense of the Kardashian Jenner household camp, but please give her a break. But yeah, this is very clearly just for publicity. There's pretty much nothing else you could do about that. And Kanye kind of, again, he was under fire for this, but Kanye doesn't listen to criticism, which is actually kind of the way to go. But he just recently deleted some screenshots of a text message conversation, apparently with one of his managers or something, or someone he's working with, apparently saying that DaBaby's manager wasn't clearing the Jail 2 feature, essentially, so it wasn't supposed to be on the album. And that DaBaby and DaBaby's manager weren't responding and picking up calls or whatever. So that seemed like a weird thing. And then there was another screenshot that was posted where apparently it was Kanye and DaBaby talking to each other, and they like had cleared it up. And Kanye was like, hey, apparently there's some people on your team who are trying to do you dirty. And so the brotherhood of coonery continues with these two. Like, it's just absolute ridiculousness. And so, in other news this week, Kanye posted Drake's address.
Oh my god, that's right,
on Instagram. Just completely doxing Drake.
Straight up put up his address. The best part is Drake then goes on or posts a video of him just driving around in a car dying of laughter. Like, did he really just do that? Is he such a petulant child? They're just gonna leak my address randomly. Okay, cool. Just pop it up. Thanks, Kanye.
And again, it's the enemy of my enemy here. I'm once again the rare defense of Drake here.
In defense of Drake, that might be the one and only time we ever say that ever.
Yeah, because like maybe he's like fake, like not serious laughing, because there is this sort of like feud going on. Kanye said that like it's going to be like over for him, this et cetera stuff. And he's been making this big deal. But you could look at it as Drake, like, listen, Donda just like Kanye just dropped Donda. That thing's there now. Drake has announced that Certified Lover Boy is going to be coming out next week. God bless. Help us. So he's like going to be releasing his album. Whatever he's going to say is probably going to be on there, if anything. We know Drake, there will be something. And if I'm taking it as face value and it's not like Drake still being upset that he lost the Pusha T thing, I'd just be kind of just like, okay, here's Drake. I mean, here's Kanye at it again. I'm just going to I'm just going to do me. And Kanye is just going to be up to his antics. And I can't really do much about that. I think he understands it's all just show too. And lastly, because we like to end Westworld on a fun note, Kanye West is legally changing his name to Ye.
Didn't he try to change his name to like Christian Billionaire or something? What was it? Hold on. I wonder if it's in here. Ah, it is. Good. He said he wanted to. He considered changing his name to Christian Genius Billionaire Kanye West in 2019.
Cool, man. Again, I'm fully defeated.
If this doesn't give you an idea into why we are like, stop giving stupid people attention.
I'm so tired of winning. I've had it enough. I've had enough with the winning. I'm so over the winning. So yeah, that's Westworld. That's Kanye West. And again, we on Audioface try to cover Kanye West as little as possible because we know that these are just publicity stunts he's doing most of the time. We cover the music and then we cover like the rollout around that and try to keep it as like, you know, contextual to what's actually happening in news as possible. Again, it's a podcast about news that mostly matters, so we try to keep it to the stuff that kind of mostly matters. Yeah, but yeah, this other places and outlets will cover Kanye more closely and more specifically, and we specifically won't, not only because of this publicity stunt thing is outdated, but like, has to be said, he's going through very public mental health problems, and like no one's really giving him that space. And seriously, like, he sort of just needs to address that first and address the stuff going on in his life before he makes any more music. But I think that's clear.
Please, God. But moving on to actual music.
Yes, we have Screen Violence by Churches, 10 songs, 43 minutes long. Substantially better.
Churches.
And Churches have been really interesting. I generally liked them a lot, but when we reviewed Love is Dead in 2018...
I did not like Love is Dead at all.
Yeah, I remember thinking it was definitely a step backwards. Like, it felt like a little too much of a trying to do a modern spin on some of the like whiniest emo pop punk of the late 2000s, essentially. It just didn't really match and didn't really fit right. And so I think on this album here, it's only three songs fewer and it's barely 10 minutes shorter, not even that. But I feel like they stripped a little bit back to basics, getting to how they really work as a group. And also just songwriting. The songwriting in here is stellar.
It's fantastic.
And yeah, this all comes down together to being a really good project. So you want to kind of jump in and lead?
Yeah, so again, like their album that came a couple of years ago that we reviewed, same thing. I didn't enjoy it. I thought it was a step in the wrong direction for them. But this album, when I heard the track How Not to Drown with featuring The Cure's Robert Smith, I thought that was an interesting sound that they were going for. I was like, okay, let's see. Obviously, we judge a track really in this entirety one, we have it throughout the whole project that it's supposed to be in, so it makes better context. But it was kind of, when I heard that, okay, this would be a step in the right direction, and then listening throughout the album, like, wow, yeah, they really nailed this album. Starting off the opening track, it's a long opening track, Asking for a Friend, at about 5 minutes long, but I think it's a really good opening sound of what they want to do. They're back to those beautiful, gorgeous synths, those really good, like, indie electronica, which, you know, I have a soft spot for, because it's one of my favorite genres naturally, but the vocals are fantastic on it. Everything on that track really gets you into the lyricism. Everything's like, wow, okay, they're back to what they did before, but even pushing it a little bit more forward. Kind of sounds like they have a little chip on their shoulder a little bit, maybe, throughout the whole album, which is something that could be good or could be bad, depending on the artist. If you're Kanye, have a chip on your shoulder, probably not a good thing. But if you're Churches, probably a good thing. So,
yeah, if that motivates you to improve your work, it's a good thing.
Yes, exactly. Second track, He Said, She Said, also great. It grew on me the first listen. I heard it. I didn't necessarily like it too much because they had like infused indie electronic with a little bit of like some trap beats and other stuff. I didn't really like it that much. But then second time through, I was like, okay, I can kind of get on board with it. But it's still probably my least favorite track on the album, maybe. But
I mean, we did this as new singles, and it's not my favorite song on the album, but it's one of my favorites. And I think it's sort of where you get to the part of the songwriting aspect. I said this is when we did new singles, that he said, she said, it's kind of like that song about like people mm-hmm. having different stories in these kind of
things.
Oh
yeah, the lyrics is fantastic.
Yeah, it goes to like a depth and a level in these things that like you don't always see in like popular facing music, right? But yes. It's really well executed there. Also well executed on California's as well, but afterwards is Violent Delights. I drank, you drunk, you couldn't fight. You were not fun. I love the way the drums are really punchy in that song. I love just how energetic it feels while also feeling like passionate and powerful. Like it has like the emotion and raw energy of like a really slow song, but it also feels just like energetic and powerful and intense with the drums making it go faster. So I think mm-hmm. there's a really good mix and execution there in Violent Delights especially. But yeah, I very much like a lot of this album.
Yeah, it reminds me a bit of The Naked and Famous, of their album that came out last year. Kind of that sound, but even polished a little bit more, per se, in there, which I thoroughly enjoyed that album last year a lot. So it's great because the indie electronic, I think, was kind of missing a little bit here or there. You had some artists that were making some stuff, but it wasn't anything like that was exploding into it. And I know that Churches was coming out with it. I'm like, okay, this could kind of steamroll this back up again. And Violet Delights is a fantastic track. Right after that, you have How Not to Drown with Robert Smith, which I really, really enjoy that track. Fantastic.
Oh, it was a really good. I mean, Robert Smith's a little bit kind of like doing some really nice modern collabs and bringing his own.
Yeah, he is. He's not being Uncle Rocky at all, which like even with Gorillaz, when they had him up, I was like, well, this is going to be interesting to see what he does. His voice is still very good. And he kind of fits himself to fit within whatever project he's doing, which is good to see for somebody who's been making music for, I don't know, 30 plus years, 40 years.
Yeah.
So crazy.
I really like, my favorite song in the album is Final Girl, but like I've talked a lot about a lot of these things. Again, I think topically it's sort of like addressing sort of like a trope in movies and things like that, and then taking it out lyrically in a song, really well done. But Lullaby is near the end because I think, I don't know, Kanye took a lot of my brain power from the rest of like the reviews here, so I can't best answer this question, unfortunately, but I don't think this album is top heavy. I just really like a lot of how it begins. I think
it's not top heavy at all.
When you get to like Final Girl is a really good track, kind of getting you to the end of the album. Again, this album doesn't really get slow. It just like changes energies from being a little bit higher tempo, a little bit lower tempo. It's like Lullabies is maybe like one of the quieter songs, but still has like a
it's still upbeat.
Yeah.
It's definitely an interesting album because it flows very well. We tend to like more of the tracks up top, but that's not to say it's top heavy necessarily. It's just the way that our brains work and just our personal preferences per se. But the rest of the album is still fantastic. It flows well. The production on it still is uphold. And again, like what's interesting too is like this track like Lullabies on any other album, this would be like a really upbeat, like high-paced song. But then for this context, this album, it's where it slows down a tiny bit, but it's not even a slow song. But that's not to say that that's necessarily a bad thing either. They've managed to make an album where you can keep a solid pace throughout it, but it's not going to overwhelm you, or it's not going to bore you out either. Because you can very easily make an album, you know, get up to one level up here, and then just sustain that level the entire time, and you get annoyed or bored with it because it's just that, and you're like, okay, there's nothing else. But they managed to do it with their lyricism and the production to make you feel sucked in and engaged throughout the entirety of the album.
Yeah. But it was really well executed, and I like how it the tempo choice they made, the production choices they made, on just a surface level with the album, it keeps you engaged and keeps you going and makes it so you can kind of get through the project, which isn't long by any means, but feels pretty complete at 42 minutes. Could maybe even have used an extra song. But it's definitely a marked improvement in a broader context to like Church's discography and kind of a return to form, if you will, of like how they really were in like 2013, 2015, which is like really, really solid production in the alternative music space, taking what was good and alternative at the time and just kind of building upon it and growing on that. And this album does that in 2021. So it's really good step in the right direction for Churches. And it's one of their better albums to date, I would say.
Yes. I'm impressed with them. I'm glad. Because I was worried after Love Is Dead that they had just hit like a couple good things and that was it. But no, they proved that they still have a lot more ideas in there, a lot more stuff that they can make and produce. A fantastic record. Really enjoyed it.
Arbitrary Scale this week on Audioface is Joe Biden falling asleep in front of world leaders. And I'm going to give this Joe Biden falling asleep in front of Justin Trudeau, because that'd just be like it'd be a funny moment. Justin would have some funny neoliberal quip about it or something. I don't know. One of those like fake politician jokes that politicians do to try to seem approachable, but it ends up sounding like the joke, like the kind of dad joke a dad would make if your dad happened to do blackface in the past. And what are you getting with this?
This is Joe Biden falling asleep in front of Angela Merkel. Like Angela Merkel is like, she's done after this, you know, she's like, you know what? I got to do one more sit down with the US president. And then he falls asleep on me. He's like, fucking this, great.
Now this is worse than Trump. I meant to do the story last week. We honestly both forgot about it, but it's so awesome.
This is my favorite story of the whole year.
Yeah. Anderson .Paak confirmed listens to Audioface. Anderson .Paak has gotten a tattoo that reads, and I proudly quote, "When I'm gone, please don't release any posthumous albums or songs with my name attached. Those were just demos and never intended to be heard by the public." End quote.
Tatted on his right forearm in bold for all of the world to see.
Some people do like do not resuscitate on their bodies. This is like a do not bring me my music at all. Like just like enjoy what I have while I'm here. That's it. That's all, Jack.
I love it so much. It's just hilarious.
It's been one of like the developing stories of Audioface for the 201 episodes we've been doing this bastard of posthumous records, and how it's oftentimes like, let alone how they don't feel that respectful to the artist. You're doing a lot of guesswork as to what the artist intended. The finished project suck. Like they're just not as good as even like what the artist
just like. They destroy it destroys the legacy of them all the time too. Like look at Pop Smoke, because that second record's like, man, this is horrible.
It just cheapens the legacy.
Exactly. You know, when we got the Young Audioface studio, when we got that Rupert Murdoch money allegedly, we're gonna have that framed behind us, like Joe Rogan status behind our heads is gonna be the Anderson .Paak tattoo, just superimposed, framed.
Anderson .Paak, you are. As soon as you want to tell the world that you listen to Audioface podcast, we really appreciate it. And you are welcome on the show. You can be on this you can be one of these new boxes that's right next to us talking, just talking shop about, I got some questions about Silk Sonic and Bruno Mars. I promise I will keep them PG rated. That is such a, and of course, like we're not the only ones who have particular like qualms with posthumous record releases. There are other people in the music industry have been talking about this too, but it's a particular hammer we've been hitting with particular points and particular wording and verbiage that we've been using. So I really liked it.
Yes, me too.
Now moving on to our last album of the week. We did a little bit of Sean Indulgence earlier. So now, I mean, me Indulgence earlier with Gorillaz. So now we're going to do some Sean Indulgence with Big Red Machines. How long do you think it's going to last? It's 18 songs and an hour and 4 minutes long. Sorry, 15 songs, hour 15 and 4 minutes songs. Long.
Yeah, this is an interesting indie project.
Indie experimental project.
Yeah,
but also happens to have Taylor Swift featuring on a couple songs.
And Fleet Foxes and a bunch of other people. But it's the project is it's Justin Vernon of Bon Iver and Aaron Dessner from the head of the National. So two pretty prominent big indie artists coming together and be like, you know, let's go make some music together and getting out a bunch of other people to go on and make a solid indie folk album. And I really enjoyed this. There's a lot to be said. I mean, Justin Vernon's vocals can always get to me every once in a while, just like the sound of his. It's kind of like Neil Young, where the songwriting, the production is beautiful, but his voice is always an acquired taste for people. So sometimes on certain tracks, it's a little too much Justin Vernon. Other tracks, sounds great. That's just a personal thing. Nothing against you, Justin. You make gorgeous music. But it's like Billy Corgan with Smashing Pumpkins. Love the Smashing Pumpkins. Sometimes his voice can get annoying here or there, but you take it for what it is. That's probably my only complaint of the album is that. And it can feel a little long towards the end, but it is what it is. It's not like Kanye Lon where I'm just sitting there like, I don't want to do this podcast ever again. Dan, I retire. But it's not that bad.
It's
not that long, I should
yeah,
say.
Yeah, definitely. And this album, at least preference-wise for me, has a number of things going against it. A, being folk. B, being kind of slower. And C, being 2021 and longer than an hour. But again, I listened to some pretty long things this week, and this did not feel like as long. It made a really good use of its time, and it's sort of, I'd say, especially with the drums, it does like a very like alternative electronic folk kind of deal thing that gives it like a soft undertone or a soft measure of things while still giving you room to have interesting instrumentation. Really, the vocals are front and center, and they sing in a lot of this project. No pun intended. They are like really prominent in a lot of this project, especially when you have the really good singer-songwriters that you have featured throughout it.
Yes.
But it's all layered with this like nice sort of dreamy light drum soundscape with each song that doesn't get like drowned out or anything. It doesn't become like a drone. It's just like, I think it's a really good sort of like soundscaping effect that gives the album like a sound.
Yes. Exactly. It gives you a atmosphere that it wants to set you in. You know, it sets you up for that kind of area, transports you, and it sticks to that throughout the entire album. Excuse me. Starts off the first track, Latter Days. You, the water's edge, on the jetty when you were a kid. Passed around a plastic cup. Passed out spinning in the house where you grew up. Childhood bed and the wildest dream you ever had. You were calling out forever. Featuring Anais Mitchell, which I assume is how you pronounce their name.
I think it's Anais, but yeah.
Anais, okay. Really like that track a lot. I really like all of the female vocalists that are on this album. Like, knocked out of the park. She's also on the track with Fleet Foxes of Phoenix, but more on that in a little bit. But I really like the contrast vocals of everybody on this record that is featured. Like, everybody contributes, puts their little own flavor and touch to it. But again, it's all cohesive, which is very hard to do when you have different walks of life on this record. Second track, Reese, is pretty good. It actually reminds me a little bit of the way the piano and the drums are in the background reminds me of Cardigan from Taylor Swift on her album Folklore last year. Like, it sounds kind of similar to that, but granted, Justin Vernon did write that track with Taylor, so I can kind of get a sense of that. After that, my favorite track on the album, naturally, which is Phoenix with Robin Pecknold of Fleet Foxes. And again, Anais Mitchell, fantastic track. I absolutely love this track. Listen to this a lot.
I was trying to find my way. I was thinking my mind was made. But you were making my heart change shape. It's all that I can take.
I wanted to say that we want to talk about it for a while on the podcast, but I'm not going to self-indulge too much. It's just really, really good indie. And Jack Antonoff, this is how you write a fucking indie song. So hop on it, my guy.
Yeah, I love the production flourishes. I love the brass section that you get kind of throughout it, just lightly layered through it. It's really good stuff.
Robin's voice, I will never get tired of Robin Pagnold's voice for as long as I live. So that too.
Right after that is Birch, which is my personal favorite thing I've ever heard Taylor Swift do.
We have common needs. We can so deeply. We can be replete. Address table needs. It is Swift your speed.
Absolutely wow. Beautiful record.
I'm going to tell Bonnie about that. She's going to be happy. I really like Birch. I think it's a good... This is one of those works that is interesting because Justin Vernon's vocals on here, I think, are where he really stretches his range on there, but he actually does it and nails it out of the park. And then Taylor Swift in the background is fantastic.
Yeah, it's the perfect kind of... Yeah, when they harmonize and do like a duet kind of deal, it sounds beautiful when just Taylor's alone and she's doing her own thing very, very well. I really think she's in her element in this kind of music where she's bringing her like soft folk style into something that's a little more production wise, like of a different exercise than what she usually does. It really makes for great stuff. And Renegade Afterwards is a really good song as well.
Still
I think it's the more it's the more popular song from this like Big Mad Regime collab with Taylor Swift. But I definitely liked Birch more.
Yeah, I like Renegade for the lyric, for the lyricism in there, because some of Taylor's lyrics here and there can like be on the nose or something, or not very convincing, but the lyrics in Renegade, it really feels genuine. It feels fantastic throughout it too. So those two tracks, interesting that Big Red Machine, they put the two Taylor's tracks right next to each other, but I think they did it perfectly because they complement each other well. Birch complements Phoenix right after each other. And then after Renegade, you have It Goes to Cincinnati, and it still flows very well. It's not like you're missing anything or whatnot. You're just getting that little chunk right there, and then you're able to get the rest of the album too. So very well done of the way it's placed. But impressed with Taylor Swift on those features for sure. She's, you know, there's going to be a long list of the anti Coldplay award that I want to give out to Audioface, or make it the inverse Coldplay, I think is what I call it.
The reverse Coldplay.
Yeah. There's a few artists that have done that, so I'm into, and she's one of them.
Yeah. So you can't get away from the fact that this album is a quieter one, a more mellow one for sure, but that is to say that it's still, especially like as you get to the more mellow part, as the latter part of the album, it has a good, it still has a good sort of tempo. Like I said, those backing drums really help you keep like a little bit of a rhythm going. And in a part where it could otherwise potentially be a snore, you're able to kind of get through the songs, and it has like I said, like that production quality up to it, like really makes it interesting. Like, I think you could talk better about more some of those songs though.
So you have a couple decent tracks two towards the middle and the end of the album. You have Mimi featuring Elsie. I guess Audioface is not known for pronouncing names right. So we were always butcher everybody's. I butchered my own name. At one point I called myself Dan on this podcast. So you never know.
We respectfully butcher people's names. Respectfully.
Yes, exactly. You have Easy to Sabotage, Hutch, that are also quite good songs. And then towards the end. But the thing is, it does slow down a bit. Like Hutch, you have this really nice piano that's throughout the track and whatnot. But as Dan was saying earlier, it is a slower album. So if you don't like slow tracks, it never, like, especially towards the end, it gets pretty slow and chill towards it. So if you're not a fan of that style, you won't necessarily like it towards the end. But there's still a lot of good things in this record towards the end that I think is worth listening to. Like Magnolia, you have this like really nice drum beat within the piano going back, which I think Dan said again too, towards the beginning of the album. You have the percussion is fantastic about this whole record. The drums really keep you intrigued onto what's going on, even though you have like slower stuff, guitars, pianos, all this other stuff, which by themselves aren't going to do enough of the trick for a record that's more than an hour long. But within with the percussion, it wraps everything together and keeps you engaged throughout it. And Magnolia is a perfect example of that. It's the last song on the album, but it still keeps you engaged through it. Really like the piano on it too.
Yeah.
Last two songs, June's the River and Brycey. What'd you second say?
Well, there's June's the River, Brycey, and then New Auburn at the very end.
But, New Auburn, sorry. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Magnolia, June's the River is also really nice. I think like that's if you make it around to the end of that album, that's a really nice song there. And then New Auburn also ends really nicely. This is a good, like, it'll put you to sleep in a very nice way. Like, it'll be like a calm, soothing kind of deal. But
it's like the baby on the flight. Good job, pilot.
Yeah, it's a very musically, like, concentrate is not the wrong word, and like dense is not necessarily like the best term I'm using for here, but there's a lot in the album, there's a lot musically like that it offers, which is really cool. It's like an experimental indie folk thing with some really heavy hitting guest features that are nice enough to do multiple features on the song on the album, and they all turn out pretty stellar. So definitely check this out. This is one of those, you know, on Audioface we usually do like a really big mainstream artist, another one that maybe you've heard of that's been around for a minute or so, someone kind of seasoned. And then, you know, we do something indie that you may not have heard of, but might be kind of cool. This is a very classic Audioface episode in that regard. And this is definitely like something you want to check out and that kind of off the beaten path sort of thing.
Yes. And yeah, I really enjoyed this record. I'm pleasantly surprised at how much I enjoyed it. You got a lot of, it's great. This summer, we have had a lot of fantastic music. We've also had a lot of shitty music. So it's been a good summer.
Yeah, adds up. So arbitrary scale is, because we do arbitrary scales every time on Audioface, because what we said in the review is what we said in the review. That's what actually matters. Rating systems don't. So the rating system this week is Biden falling asleep in front of world leaders. I'm going to give this the Catalonia. What if Biden just like...
All right.
Just chilling in Catalonia for whatever reason. And because I guess he just, you know, wants some tan, because he's old, getting up there in age, wants some sun, and yeah, just messes up things with the people who are there. I don't know. He would just sleep and people would laugh at him and call him Siesta Joe.
Siesta Joe. I'm gonna call him that from now on. That's fantastic. Now, this is him falling asleep in front of the head of China. I cannot think of his name right now because he is his face. But, you know, this part like Xi Jinping. There we go. Xi Jinping sitting next to him, and then it's just the whole world just explodes. You know, it's just like everybody's like, oh my God, he fell asleep in the middle of it. What's going on? Like that. I want that to happen just to see the internet's reaction. Arbitrary scales don't matter because what matters is what we said.
Yes. Quick hits. So,
yes.
Olivia Rodrigo has finally credited Paramore as co-writers for Good For You, because there was a lot of, basically the song Good For You sounds very similar to Misery Business by Paramore, and people on TikTok were making a lot of like comparisons, mashups of these things, and Hayley Williams and Josh Foro, I've now been officially added. These are members of Paramore. Now been officially added as songwriter credits. Rodrigo never explicitly mentioned Paramore as like an influence, but the songs have like a really similar like chorus. They both kind of have this sort of like throaty voice thing or like yelling kind of thing that is going on there. So they're kind of close together there. At least
it's probably just to get around just having to deal with everything too. Just give them song credits and then you can't get sued or you don't have to do all this other legal stuff. I assume is what it was for. So the sounds like, at least.
Yeah, it just sorts everything out, just makes everything nice and easy. And it's good. Yeah. I was kind of trailing off there, but it's good that we are giving credit where, like, some artists is giving credit where credit needs to be done.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, it's not the YG J. Cole incident where you should give him credit because he basically made the whole song.
Canada, Christ. Count it up. Oh, my God.
Yes.
And here's a really interesting R. Kelly story. So R. Kelly's song catalog is up for sale because R. Kelly needs some money. And this is, you know, a lot of song or artist catalogs are up for sale, but no one seems to be wanting to bite on R. Kelly's discography. Now, like, we've been talking about artists who have been selling their, like, catalogs for a lot this year, especially. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these, like, not exactly hedge funds, but these like corporate groups with lots of money are buying a lot of these things. Like there was one group, Hypnosis, and spelled really interestingly, Songs Fund Founder. They acquired the Red Hot Chili Peppers catalog for $140 million. And they've purchased like half of Neil Young's catalog. There've been a bunch of other things where like people are purchasing the rights to these things so that
never forget when the Beatles had to go and buy their own music back from Michael Jackson's estate.
Awkward.
It's just crazy to me that you could like that happens quite often in the music industry too.
Bob Dylan sold his discography for $300 million. So there is money to be made, but it is very interesting that no one seems to be wanting to bite on R. Kelly's album discography. That's a good thing. That's a canceling yes. We can be fine with. And then Grimes hits back at the most obvious joke on the internet that she is not her boyfriend's spokesperson. She says, she called out the constant stream of like comments coming towards her saying, quote, stop harassing me on this app over fake news and I'm not my boyfriend's spokesperson. Because there's a video where she's playing with like a robot dog or whatever. And people were responding like, is he hot or is he just trying to destroy Mars? Referring to Elon Musk or whatever. So clearly the dating Elon Musk for Grimes has its downsides. Definitely the public scrutiny that you get. But I'd imagine just Elon Musk as a person, that's got to be a lot
to work with. There's a lot of downsides to that.
Yeah. And lastly, we always like to end audio face on a fun note. Lil Nas X has been named Chief Impact Officer at Taco Bell. This is one of those nonsense sort of like a company gives a celebrity a like important sounding title, but really all this means is that like they'll use the celebrity for like marketing things and maybe take some of their like guidance or insight on certain ideas.
Are you gonna get that Lil Nas X meal or what? Is it gonna be like two giant chalupas and a peach Sprite?
I mean, first of all, that kind of sounds hard, but second, like, there's the Saweetie meal, there's the Travis Scott meal. McDonald's has been getting in the game.
BTS sauce, my guy. Invest now.
My God. It's a common thing. It's really smart for a like food operator kind of company to do this and capitalize off of a wildly successful artist who happened to work at Taco Bell apparently when he was younger and also is about to release his first proper album in the next couple weeks. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see kind of like what comes around through that. But one interesting thing is that he'll be creating this like Live Moss scholarship or like, I think the Live Moss scholarship already exists because that's like a Taco Bell thing, but he's going to kind of do some philanthropic work with that, with helping people like, you know, have the funds to pursue their education in music, essentially using that like Taco Bell scholarship. So that's really cool. Lil Nas X, as is most of the time, doing the right things. And yeah, that's Audio Face.
Thank you. What does it mean to play a sound?
You can find Audioface on Twitter and Instagram at AudiofacePod, at AudiofacePod. YouTube.com/AudiofacePod is where you can subscribe to us and see all the videos. Sean can be found at SW Suarez on Twitter and Instagram. I can be found on Twitter at Dan from the Web and on Instagram at Dan from the Internet. The entire show can be found, all that stuff at AudiofacePod, but yeah, I usually do that at the end, so that's a fun robot thing. We did, because of Kanye and all the other stuff happening, we had to bump some artists. We bumped Halsey, yes. I remember. And so we're going to try to get to that next week because that was a huge release. The cover's a thing. And we'll probably be, album release jinxing Dan. We'll probably be reviewing Halsey and Drake along with another album next week. So that should be a ride. Check that out. Until then, we'll talk to you next week. Cheers.
Toodaloo.
Hang on, I'm just talking to Annie real fast.
Oh, okay. I was trying hard not to laugh that whole time.
She actually just said, I'm curious to hear what you think. Reading Twitter, I think my perspective is too scathing, but then I try to listen to the album again and I'm like, nah.
I think it's better than his other releases or whatnot. Like production wise, for sure. I think the production's pretty good, but the features just sound like really rushed and not well thought out at all.
I would agree. Everybody with that.
And like, you know, I like The Weeknd. His part wasn't even that great. Travis Scott just sounded like he was just trying to make Astro World part 15. Anybody there feels rushed. Jay-Z didn't feel genuine. Young Thug didn't feel that great. It's just all of that wasn't genuine. Or honestly, genuine, just felt rushed and not that great.
It's very disappointing for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get this Kanye stuff over with. Oh my God. I'm so over it.
Christ.